Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Well, okay. I don't remember if we did 33. 34. Kadachid dhyaya taksvashtur. Veda asamschatur mukat.
Veda asamschatur mukat.
Katam svakshyamyaham loka.
Katam svakshyamyaham loka.
Samavetanyata
pura.
Kadachid dhyaya taksvashtur.
Kadachid dhyaya taksvashtur.
Veda asam chatur mukat.
Veda asam chatur mukat.
Katam svakshyamyaham loka.
Katam svakshyamyaham loka.
Samavetanyata pura.
Samavetanyata pura.
Kadachit.
Kadachit.
Once upon a time. Dhyayataha,
while contemplating,
Srashtuhu, of Brahma, Veda, the Vedic literature,
Asan,
became manifested,
Chatukmukat,
from the four mouths. Patam
Svakshyami.
How shall I create?
Aham.
Myself.
Lokan.
All these worlds.
Samavetan.
Assembled. Yata. As they were. Buddha, in the past. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Once upon a time, when Brahma was thinking of how to create the worlds, as in the past millennium, the four Vedas, which contain all varieties of knowledge, became manifested from his four mouths. Purport. As a fire can consume anything and everything without being contaminated, so by the grace of the Lord, the fire of Brahma's greatness consumed his desire for the sinful act of sex with his daughter. The Vedas are the source of all knowledge, and they were first revealed to Brahma by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, while Brahma was thinking of recreating the material world. Brahma is powerful by dint of his devotional service unto the Lord, and the Lord is always ready to forgive his devotee if by chance he falls down from the noble path of devotional service. The Srimad Bhagavatam confirms this as follows. Swapada mulam bhajatak priyasya tyaktvanya bhavasya harik pareshaha vikarma yachot patitam katanchit dunoti sarvam vidisannivishtaha. Any person who is engaged 100% in the transcendental loving service of the Lord at his lotus feet is very dear to the personality of Godhead, Hari. And the Lord, being situated in the heart of the devotee, excuses all kinds of sins committed by chance. It was never expected that a great personality like Brahma would ever think of sex indulgence with his daughter. The example shown by Brahma only suggests that the power of material nature is so strong that it can act upon everyone, even Brahma. Brahma was saved by the mercy of the Lord. With a little punishment, but by the grace of the Lord, he did not lose his prestige as the great Brahma. Anyway, now we can move on. Brahma has made his mistake. He's been chastised by his own sons.
Corrected.
He's given up his body in a subtle way. And Krishna wants him to simply go on and continue his service. There's no use in dragging Brahma down. That's not Krishna's desire, that someone, anyone, be degraded. We become degraded, unfortunately, because of our own fault. We reject Krishna and we have to be corrected, therefore we have to be pushed down into the material world. But Krishna never wants to keep us down. That's our mentality in the material world. Instead of thinking how to get out of this world, we want to instead conquer this material world. And to do that, we have to climb to the top of the pyramid. We have to push everybody else down. So our interest, as conditioned souls, is to take every opportunity we can to push others down so that we can be elevated. The only way we can really be elevated is to see that others are degraded. Anyway, that's not Krishna. Krishna doesn't behave like that. Krishna doesn't have to struggle to maintain his supreme position. He doesn't have to push anybody else down or defeat the competition. So therefore, if someone wants to engage in Krishna's service, then Krishna will protect him in this way. Even if there's failure, we come as fallen conditioned souls. We've done nothing. Everything we've done in our life is a mistake. If you don't serve Krishna, everything you do is wrong. So you've been doing only wrong things. So if after starting devotional service, we do a few of those wrong things again, Krishna is willing to continue trying to engage us. There may be a limit. If someone becomes too deviant, then and really cannot be considered following the process anymore, then he may have to be sent back to the material world for some time, not permanently. Krishna can only tolerate up to a limit. But as much as possible, Krishna just encourages us to keep on going. So, Padamulam Bhajatak Priyasya. So, for a devotee, Priya, the dear devotee, Kintu Paborya Eva Priya, the spiritual master is an ideal devotee. He's not God, but he's very dear to God. What are you going to do with God? If God came to be your spiritual master, how could you deal with him? How can you approach God? The problem is I need to be trained up so I can approach God. I need a spiritual master, not God as my spiritual master. I need someone who's dear to God, who I can have access to as a spiritual master. So that the devotee is Priya. And it's more valuable to associate with the Priya, Prabhupada Priya, the dear devotee of the Lord, than to try to associate with the Lord himself. For a conditioned soul, or for anybody. So, for the Priya, who is Bhajataha, Sapadamulam Bhajata, of the dear devotee who is worshipping, Padamulam, which we translate as lotus feet, but literally Mulam is the base of the feet, the bottom of the feet. So, we worship the feet that are the bottom of the body. The dirtiest part of the body, but the transcendental body of the Lord is all pure. So, and out of respect, we approach from the feet first. But if you want to be even more humble, you can go to the bottom of the feet. So, Padamulam, not just the top of the feet, the bottom feet, to touch the ground and touch everything that's on the ground. I want to adhere to the bottom of your feet. Padamulam. So if someone is so humble that he's worshipping the bottom of Krishna's feet, Tyakta Anya Bhavasya, and he's really made an endeavor to give up all interest in other things. Anya Bhava. Vikarma Yat Chat Patitam. If such a devotee happens to do nonsense, then Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord, he can do whatever he wants. He rectifies the situation. Dunoti Sarvam. He cleans everything up himself. Krishna rectifies the discrepancy in his devotee. Because he appreciates what the devotee is trying to do. He doesn't give up on his devotees. He may punish them or rectify them, which may involve some pain and some shame, but Krishna corrects everything, and the devotee is reinstated, and he goes on with his service. Here Brahma is going to go on and create everything that has to be created. Well, let's see, what else? The Vedas came out of his mouth. Okay, that's what happens next. He's puzzled, doesn't know what to do. Okay, how am I going to create now? I'm back to my work, but what am I going to do? How am I going to proceed? The Vedas appear to give him that guidance. The Vedas are the, we talked about Shruti being script. So the Vedas give the design of how a universe is supposed to be organized, created. That's why at this point the Vedas appear. That's what's required at this moment, is the Vedic instruction. Even Brahma, who is empowered, who has met Lord Narayan and got the blessings and promise of Lord Narayan that I give you all the intelligence you need. So he's especially empowered person to do this job. Still, he needs the Vedic guidance. Shruti Smriti Mamatanu. Krishna tells Uddhava, the Shruti and the Smriti are like my two bodies. Shreyas Twanupalabdhyarte Sahaja Sadhana Yordapi. And they're the best source of guidance for the bewildered living entities, especially about the matters of the sadhya and the sadhana. Of course, you can find, sadhya and sadhana is a very general categorization. Basically, it covers everything that needs to be done, everything, all endeavors. There is sadhya, is what you're aiming at, your goal. What do you really want to achieve? You want to achieve happiness. In order to achieve happiness, to be happy, what do I need to be happy? Well, I should have a wife, a few children. I better get a house for them to live in and provide for them, that they eat nicely, that there's security, that education is provided to the children, the wife has some nice clothes to wear. Anyway, for that I'm going to need money. I better go out and get a job. So, for the sadhya, for the purpose of happiness, there are so many sadhanas, so many means that have to be taken to. You have to do so many things to get so many sadhanas to get your sadhya. So it's a very general idea of the goal and the endeavor practice that is required to achieve the goal. It all realms, in mundane matters and in transcendental matters. The best source of guidance about understanding what is your sadhya and what is the sadhana for that sadhya, that is the Shruti and Smriti. Hare Krishna. First of all comes the Shruti. And the Shruti has appeared. Brahma, he does know what his sadhya is. I'm supposed to create this universe. That's my service to the Supreme Lord. But he doesn't know the sadhana. Okay, now he's up to this point and he's confused. Now what am I supposed to do? So the Vedas appear out of his mouth, first of all to give him the information. Then, of course, for the rest of us, the Vedas also have similar use. So, all knowledge, we may not be interested in studying the Vedas directly, the original Vedas, but if we've ever studied anything, if we've ever had any purpose in studying any kind of knowledge in our life, then that originates from the Vedic knowledge. All knowledge descends from the Vedas by parampara. The smritis derive from the Vedas, the practical sciences derive from the smritis, and even the mundane, all the mundane varieties of knowledge come by generations of transformation from the Vedas. And next verses will describe about what is provided by these Vedas. I see, actually up to verse 45. Up to about verse 45 is elaboration on what the Vedas contain and what facilities they provide. We'll read about that in the next days. Okay. So any questions or comments?
When we say that Gayatri is called Veda Mata,
yes.
How does it work? Because I remember reading some description of how Gayatri expands into us. Chavasogi and Chavasogi expands into us.
How does it work? That's not really, at least I don't know. It's not a historical process. Yeah, it's not something that like some sort of evolutionary process, the way that Darwin tried to describe. It doesn't work that way, because the Vedas are eternal. Okay, it's not that before a certain age, there weren't any elaborate Vedas. There was only Gayatri. No. There was never a time when there was only Gayatri. It's in a metaphysical sense, an abstract sense, that all the Vedas are expanding from Gayatri. They are. The hierarchy is there, but there never a time when only Gayatri was there and not the rest of the Vedas. Even in the spiritual world, especially in the spiritual world, everything is eternal. But the Vedas have their seed. First of all, the Vedas are composed of transcendental sound. That sound originates from the breathing of Narayan, of the Supreme Lord. And when a sound is described in shastras, yoga shastras, originates from the Manipura chakra, navel, in a subtle form, and it rises to the heart, then the throat, and then comes out of the mouth. And that's four stages. Only the fourth one is actually manifest, what we perceive as sound. The others are subtle. And before it sound manifests as words and sentences, as we understand, it's in its subtle form. And that's called nada. Nada is actually more subtle than the omkara is the articulation of that nada, of that original sound. And from that Omkar come all phonemes and words and so on, sentences composed of words. The intermediate evolution, Omkara, nada actually is the first manifestation of sound. It's a subtle sound. In articulate form, it's the syllable Om. And that syllable expands into the mantra, Gayatri mantra. Of course, there are many particular mantras. Gayatri is a meter. And then there are many mantras that are in that meter. And then there's a particular prototype of Gayatri mantra with three verbs. Dimahi, Pacholiat, like that. That's a typical Gayatri mantra, but there are several different kinds of that Gayatri mantra. There's the Brahma Gayatri, if you consider that the original. That expands from Omkara. And then, yes, all the other Vedic mantras expand from that. But it's not a historical process. It's just the... it's a constitutional expansion, just like we're expanding from Supreme Lord, but we always existed. So all the mantras are expanding from nada to Omkara to Gayatri and then into the other mantras. But it's eternally expanding. That's all I know about it. Okay. Anything else?
I'm always confused when they mention meters. What does a meter actually mean?
Meter is a rhythm. So you know, it's a pattern of the rhythm of two different kinds. Either measurement of short and long syllables, so different patterns of, you know, short and long, like a Morse code. And there are standard meters. There are actually many different meters. There's other meters. There's another class of meters that are like the meters in Western poetry, that you count the number of syllables rather than the length of them.
Oh, I see.
So there also is that class of meters called ardiya. Although it's much less commonly used, but it's also there. Anyway, that's what meter is. Meter is measurement of the rhythm of the sound, of the speech.
So, Gayatri would be at the first end.
Yeah. Gayatri is the shortest. No, it isn't. It is not. Gayatri is a compound meter. It's actually not a the original Vedic meters, the eight basic meters, or seven, are single lines, single feet. Whereas Gayatri is a compound of 3 feet. It's 24 syllables. It's three eight-foot lines.
Yeah.
Is Gayatri.
Then, I mean, it seems like we have all the different Gayatris and we're doing Gayatri and some along.
Those are, that, what we mean by, when we say Gayatris, we mean mantras that are in the Gayatri meter.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, like, some of those mantras are like the longer amount of syllables and some shorter amount of syllables.
Actual Gayatri's mantras are 24 syllables, and the shorter ones are just seed mantras or intermediate mantras.
Does that mean like
talk about chanting Gayatri?
Yeah.
But when Ayin Guruve Namaha, it's just a seed mantra.
That's
not a Gayatri mantra per se.
So it's like the Gora Gayatri and the Kham Gayatri, that's 24 syllables or so?
I think so. You can count them. They are.
Yeah, I just remember hearing this description that Vishnu Kaviraj, she describes the Kama Gayatri as like 24 and a half syllables.
Yeah, well, that's... what was the half syllable there?
It's like Ya followed by Vid or something. It's something like...
Yes.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
I heard that somebody tell me in that.
Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains it, discusses it in his own book. I forget which book. Yes. That's a technicality. Basically 24 syllables.
I always wanted to know that. Because, you know, sometimes it meters, I know someday, when I was in Nidavati, I used to often get the picture that a meter meant like a certain tune that you chant, the sloper in, but it doesn't seem like it means that at all. Like, you know.
Not a tune, it's a rhythm.
It's the rhythm.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the melody.
Yeah. So, like, people don't really so much say the rhythm in terms of differentiating short and long syllables, but they just come up with different tunes for it.
That means they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't understand the theory of it.
Yeah.
I have nothing wrong with using different tunes, but that's not what meter is. There are textbooks on the analysis, the understanding of meter. Gangadas Pandit, who taught grammar to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wrote the most famous book, Chando Manjari. And there are other textbooks. We can study these. Even Apti's dictionary has an appendix on meter.
If you very strictly say the meter, does it come out naturally as a tune? It could be very strictly, it just comes out as some short and long. Like, if you say that, make, you know, look what's short, what's long, and say carefully the meter, if, you know, does it naturally have its own form of a tune?
Melody, the pitch of the you know, melody is the pitch, you know, of the sounds, and that's musical thing. When we speak natural language and we're not singing but just speaking, the intonation, the melody of it, is not fixed by the grammar. There's nothing in grammar that teaches us, you know, when we should go high and low. Our intonation and natural speech just is something additional, you know, that expresses mood. When we're asking a question, you know, the voice rises, and, you know, and so on. So that's separate. That's completely separate from meter. It's even completely separate from grammar. Meter, when you learn grammar, there are rules of meter. Are there? No. Well, yeah, I mean, you learn about short and long vowels. And so, although, you know, we don't analyze the meter, but words have their own natural meter. Words have short and long syllables.
Yeah.
And grammar, to learn grammar means you have to, you know, actually learn how to use words. You have to learn which syllables are long and which are short.
Yeah.
You know, you don't learn words correctly if you don't know which, you know, whether it's a short or a long vowel. But we don't learn anything about what melody it's supposed to be sung at. We're not singing, we're talking. And song is adding music to speech. It's a separate thing. So meter is a natural function of speech. Melody is something we can add, but it's separate. There's, you know, if you carefully say the meter exactly right, it's not that it's automatically going to have a certain tune.
Right.
Okay. In the spiritual world, everyone is singing. Katha-ganam, all the talk is singing.
Yeah.
But that's special.
Is that at some point that, you know, like, if somebody's writing poetry, they have to, like, fit it into the exact meter and have even lines and all that? Is there some point for the whole thing at that?
I'm sorry, can you catch
me? You know, like, if somebody's writing poetry in Sanskrit, then they have to fit it into the meter, you know, has to have even lines, the right amount of short.
Yes, if you're writing in verse.
So what's the purpose of it to do like that? It hasn't got any music.
Why have verses and not just speak without those restrictions? Why? Hare Krishna. Well, it's not necessary. It's easier. It's attractive. Adding music, adding meter. There's no meter if you have prose. If you don't have verses, then there's no rhythm. Now, then all you have is the natural rhythm of the words placed in the sentence, but there's no pattern. when you add a pattern of rhythm, and when you add a pattern of rhyme, when you know you have some rhyming at the end of the lines, that's an attractive feature. It makes it easier to, you know, more attractive to hear, and especially if you want to memorize the text, if it's in verse form, if it's even many textbooks are written in verse form. The interest is not to write poetry. The interest is to teach some practical subject. But they write in verse because students can memorize the verses much easier than prose. It's a mnemonic device for memorizing, to put things, if not in sutras, at least in shlokas, things that are meant for memorization. And Vedic education is mostly memorization, actually memorizing what you're studying. Or hearing it, and then trying to, you know, practicing it to memorize it, to have it under, you know, access to it by, you know, your own brain, by memorizing it. So putting it into verse is a device for facilitating that memorizing. Okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Thank you.